Session number 27053.
Mr. Dre, Reel 9. Now, we've come to the point where you're leaving High Wycombe, the St. John's Wood camp. When would this be?
I would imagine it's about at the end of October.
1943. Now, so where were you going now?
We were going down to Hythe. Not the whole battalion, but one company was going to Hythe. And we were going on the...
In Kent,
where the ranges are. Where the ranges are. I don't know if they've still got ranges there, but they've been well-established range fields. One company we were going. The others were going. The rest of the battalion was at Folkestone in Shorncliffe Barracks or something there, one of them barracks where the rest of the battalion was. And we were on coastal defence, and we had three pillboxes.
Now tell me about these. What were the pillboxes like?
Well, they were just little round affair, very low. Three apertures, one facing direct out and one right and left, giving you a flank observation. An entrance where you stepped in, and then you had to turn sharp right or left to get in. And that was, of course, so that if a missile or a shell or a bomb had dropped, it wouldn't blow shrapnel into the thing. We had three of them.
We
didn't live in them. We lived in all the hotels along the seafront. There was boarded up and that, but we had the Moyle Towers Hotel.
What was it like? Well, I mean, what was the room still hotel room?
Yes.
They'd been stripped out.
No, they were stripped out. But we had bunk beds, and same when they used the hotel kitchen for feeding us and everything. The front reception was the guard room. They had a guard room there, because that's where we lived. But so many men and I had to go on guard. Some held the pillboxes, and some just guarded the perimeter, because the first 30, 40 yards was barbed wire right along the seafront. I don't know if there was mines in there or not. There was down on the beach. There was sort of scaffolding poles all in and barbed wire. We had
You were guarding the beach defences,
There was a coastal defence, and then we had one of the pipelines that went out on a pier. And apparently, what was going to happen? It was nothing to do with us. The engineers controlled it. We could walk out there. There's a wooden walk out and, to the end, and they were going to pump oil into the sea and fire it, set it fire if there'd been an invasion fleet coming in. This is what we're told, but certainly there was these pipes ran out on this pier, and it was a wartime construction. And platoon of our company was in a little Martello Tower. Just down from us, and
an old one.
Yeah, but they lived in it, and today it's a private resident. And I have, since the war, had correspondence with the chappie that bought it and repaired it, and told him a bit about it. On top of the Martello Tower, we had a twin Lewis machine gun mounted for ACAC purposes. I never fired it. I never had anything to do with it. But they were some of these lads that were in there. In that, they were Indian Wallahs, as we called them. They were men that would time serve regular soldiers that had come back from India, and they knew every weapon that the British Army had, like, and they knew how to handle it. So, and they did fire on a couple of occasions, mainly aerial photography. These planes used to come up sometimes, the Germans, and come right down the coast, and then everything would open up at them, the Bofors and the big guns, but they'd slip out to sea again. So they'd had a shot or two of that, but never done much good. But in the pillboxes, we had Vickers machine guns. Vickers. Now, what happened, there was none of us lads knew anything about a Vickers machine gun, and they had a shortage of NCOs. Now, these old Indian Wallahs, they're old soldiers. We called them Indian Wallahs. But they, of course, knew everything about them. But a lot of them were private soldiers. And most of them had been sergeants and one thing, and then busted in their time for being drunk or something. or the other, but they were typical old soldiers. You never saw one of them on guard, never saw any of them go on route marches. And the sergeant major was one of them, so they were his friends. He'd served in India with them, so they got out of everything. They were the finest scroungers and old soldiers I ever known. All us young boys.
Did you resent? That?
No. They used to tell us stories about India and full of bull, of course. It wasn't all true, but tell us of their adventure in India. They were all wearing the ribbon of the Wasuri campaign, 1937, the last battle we fought up on the frontier, I think it was. And they all had this medal ribbon wearing that they'd all been up there with our 1st Battalion, who was at that time in Burma, but they'd done their 7 years, so they'd sent them home, and they were with the 4th Battalion. And at all events, we were in this room in the hotel. There was one of these old soldiers with us, and it was a rainy Sunday afternoon. He hadn't got much to do, and he hadn't got much money to go down the cafe. And we had a little naffy there. It wasn't only for us, it was from these AK-AK boys and the engineers that were billeted along the front. And he said, I think I'm going to be a sergeant. And we all laughed and thought that funny, like, just to say. And sure enough, he was called Spooky Manson. They reckon he had died when he was out in India of a fever or something and resurrected him back. And they reckon he had died when he was seriously ill, but he was back and... Oh, Spooky, and he said he was going to be a sergeant, and so we all laughed. And a few days later, Spooky had gone, packed his kit and gone. We didn't know what was on. And within about a fortnight, up the little driveway to the Moyles Hotel comes strolling Spooky with three smartly bright white stripes on his arm. And what he had done, he'd been an NCO before, you see. As I told you, a lot of them, they used to mess around and get into trouble, and they'd lose their stripes and that. So he'd been a sergeant. They nearly all had and knew one another, these lads. And here he was a sergeant. And now what his job was now was to teach us boys how to handle these Vickers machine guns. And that's what his job was. And it was that easy for him because he showed us the Vickers machine guns and how to work them.
Well,
and
tell us a bit about it. Because, it's quite an interesting gun. Oh, it's important.
Yeah.
How did you operate it?
Well, they showed us, of course, the coolant system and how to watch the coolant system. They're cooled with water and the pipe that comes from the can into the... And how to drain it and clean it.
Why did you have to watch it?
Well, if it gets to boiling point, you see, it will boil. They will boil. And they'll steam like a steam engine if they get really hot. And also, how to load the belts. We had a funny little machine thing could load them, but he'd make us load them by hand sometimes, the belts.
Was it easy?
Well, it was a fiddly job, but the little machine was quite good. It could put these in, and we would have them. And then there was a way of layering them in there. They had in a tin. A little tin, and the way we packed them in, so they ran out of the thing into the gun. Now the other side, the second gunner, he had to feed it out, bring it out, the belt out, so that it didn't get caught at all. And we're generally handling the thing, how to fire them, and how they taught us to fire them. Who they were, we don't know, but they were out at sea. They'd bring a tug up, a fairly fast boat thing, towing a target, and allowed us to have a shot shooting at them, and they would be radioing back if we were hitting or not. But we had this practice days. They were soldiers out there with them from the ranges, I believe, from the Hythe Ranges, and they tow this target up through and up and down and let us have a go. Like the same aircraft came along towing a sock for the AK-AK gunners to fire at. So there was, down on the coast, there was activity quite going on practically every day.
Did they teach you the method of tapping to move it instead of...
Yeah. Well, what, the gun, you mean?
Yes, to train it. I mean, the machine gun battalions would tap it rather than
they
move
do.
It.
Yeah. We didn't know. I don't remember tapping it as such, no. We just... No, not tapping.
No, silly.
I don't remember that. Was that the Second World War? Was it? Because you.
Well, that's the machine gun battalions. Yeah, that now sophisticated, probably. But how they did
these it. Are the boyos that what we call a support battalion in Italy. In a brigade, you had three rifle battalions. You had one support battalion. They had big heavy mortars and Vickers machine guns, but it was, we didn't fire them often, mind, because. But I used to, simple-minded, like, I used to think how wonderful it'd be if a sort of German boats would come at us so we could have a realistic fire. But, you know, didn't realise there'd be bombing and shelling from damn great ships like it did happen eventually on D-Day. But, they'd call us out in the night. We'd all be asleep in bed and then there'd be a hell to play. Or we had alarm systems throughout the hotel. And you had to quickly dress and you were allocated where you're going. You didn't always go into the slit, the pillboxes. Sometimes there were slit trenches all along. Sometimes you only took up your slit trench you'd been allocated. And you knew where your field of fire was on those.
And where were they? tell us about the slit trenches. Where were they situated?
Well,
did you dig them or were they already
there? Yeah, we dug them. We dug ours. There was lots of them there. Well, as you walk along the seafront there, like a tarmac concrete road there was. Well, the pillboxes, I think, we've been back there since the war, and they'd removed the pillboxes, but the base was like a half moon juts out from the road onto the sand, and it was still there when we were where our pillboxes had been. But the slit trenches were the other side of the road, just at the edge of the road, all along there, right down to the this Martello Tower. It was about a quarter of a mile away from us. And that's where we were, and that's where we were supposed to be, and wait for the Germans to assault us.
How deep? Well, can you describe the trenches? I mean, what?
Well, they're about 4 foot long by 2 foot wide and about 3 feet deep. You're enough to get cover, perhaps a bit deeper than 3 feet. They didn't allow you to go too deep, because if you got down too deep and something hit the side, it'd bury you alive. So... And you weren't allowed to undercut them on the sides. You know, some people would drop them in and tend to dig in so that if you got an air burst, when I was in Italy, I've done it myself. Digger scooped the side out so you could get under. If there was an air burst, he wouldn't catch you in there. But they didn't like it because a shell bursting near had easier chance of burying you.
We'll definitely come back to that, of course. Anything else about these night alarms? So you just run out and occupy whatever you were meant to.
And officers would go up and check and one thing another and check all was well and they'd check that men had got ammunition there and they hadn't come out without their rifle or anything like that. You see that it was genuine, that we were in a position to help or try and repel an enemy if it was coming. Want no good rushing out without your trousers on and no rifle or something like that, you see. So that's what they'd done. And then they would, when everything was in place, perhaps the CO might be coming from battalion headquarters. And then, of course, he would come around and look around and see and make sure everything was right.
Now, anything else about Hythe?
Not really. I don't remember. I remember...
You weren't there long, really.
No. We went to on a church parade, I remember, and it was like a snake right up on the hillside to get to this church, and it seemed awful. And when we got up there, the first time we ever went to the church service, they all piled in, and they left three of us outside. They piled arms outside, in the they couldn't take them into the church, and left three of us on guards with our rifles. And there was a load of girls that were home from Wales or something. Because the area had been evacuated. You had to have a permit to go into Hythe. You couldn't just go there. And these girls were home on leave or something. I don't know what they were. They were workers in munitions or something. And they were out there and they came out of this church service and were to get a fag. And they were smoking with us and we were smoking. And of course, our sergeant major bawled us out for that, for talking to women and girls and smoking cigarettes while we were supposed to be on guard. Nothing happened, but he did took us to task for it.
What were the church parades like? I know not that one, you didn't go to that one, but when you did go to, what were they like? Because we haven't mentioned church parades.
Well, when I was at Norwich, we've done a big one in the, where there was a lot of us all in the cathedral, and no, there were nothing really. You paraded, you marched there smartly and then dismissed, you broke off, and the wardens in the place allocated us our seating, but no, there was nothing really special about a church parade.
So what happens then? When did you leave Hythe?
Well, then Hythe. When did I leave Hythe? I must have left there. We were only there about 2 months. 2 months, I suppose.
So December.
Yes, and they shipped us up to Old Park Barracks at Dover.
Old Park.
Old Park Barracks. Yeah. Now this barracks was a very good one. It was a militia barracks. Now, Hor Belisha was the Minister of War. It was him that advocated and it got it implemented to call up all 20-year-olds in July 1939 as the militia. My oldest brother went in July 39, 20-year-olds all went. And so he was a militia boy. Well, it was Hor Belisha that thought this up. Same chap had done the Pelican Crossing things, you know. The Belisha beacons.
What was so good about these barracks? Can you describe them?
Who, the barracks? Oh, they were modern. We had constant hot waters. We had more showers. Very clean and tidy paintwork and nice parquet floors. Yeah, they were. And the gymnasium was good. We had a beautiful barrack square, big square of tarmac for a barrack square. First class, for as far as we were concerned, everything we wanted, nice toilet facilities, nice canteens, nice, we called them those grub huts or for the food, dining rooms. That was quite good.
And what were you doing? You weren't there long, were you?
No,
you
not there.
Early December-ish, yeah, I had
my first Christmas in the army there.
We just about that, then.
Well, that was pretty good. We did have all the trimmings. I'd just been on leave, and I'd had a leave, and I had to go back, and it was so sad. I could have thought I was going to be home for Christmas, but I wasn't. I thought of all ways of malingering to get there, but I didn't manage. And we had Christmas turkey. We had turkey and we had plum pudding and the officers waited on us.
What was that like? How much fun was that? Was it fun? I mean, what was it
well,
like?
Well, it wasn't fun, really, but it was... No, the officers just come round and put food in front of you sort of thing, you know. But you didn't sort of do any ragging or anything like that. No way. You just thanked them and that was it. But it was a done thing for the officers to serve the men.
And was there a beer or two?
Yes, there was. Yes. We had, they gave us milk stouts. What they call milk stouts. It's much like a Mackeson stout today. They still have it. But they had these stout, bottles of stout. And I think we must have had perhaps a pint each to half bottles. It was half pint bottles. And it was quite good. Cigarettes were free. Plenty of cigarettes were handed out free. So it wasn't too bad.
And was there any special entertainment put on?
No, I don't remember anything. I don't remember anything for Christmas now.
And what about preparations for going overseas?
Well, this is it.
Embarkation leave.
Well, what they'd done, when I came back from this leave, just before Christmas, they told us we were going on embarkation leave. And they had sent me, that's why I thought I was going to be home for Christmas. They gave us embarkation leave, but ours lasted 3 days. 3 days they gave us. And we got home, and my mother, because I'd just gone back off a leave, my mother thought, I said, I kidding her, I said, I've had enough of the army, I've come home. She said, you'll have to go back, because they'll only come and fetch you. And anyhow, I had this embarkation leave, and then they cancelled it. And, you know, we were disappointed. And then just after Christmas, almost immediately, they told us that we would report to the MI room, we were going to be inoculated, we were going overseas. First of all, they told us we were going to the posting in the United Kingdom. And they gave us these inoculations and got us all ready. Then some said they're going to give you topaz and sun KD, and we thought, well, that's the Far East, India we're going. But in the end, they didn't. They gave us kit bags, special kit bags. We were marked. We put a draft number on them. We get stencils, and we had to stencil a draft numbers. AKH, I forget what the number was, but I remember this AKH was on mine, on it, on of all, but a number. And we had to all prepared, and then they said, right, they took us down to Dover Station and put us on a train at midnight. We were to tell no one that we said cheerio to all our mates and that, because it wasn't all going. We was just a draft of us going, not the battalion. And there must have been about 100 of us, I suppose, all going out. And they put us on a train, and believe it or not, we rambled through the night, didn't know where we were and that sort of thing. And the next morning we got out of the train and we were in the docks in Liverpool. Now that, in them days, was unheard of, but I've talked to people that know the railway system since, and there is a system, because we were Southern Line, do you understand? And we were getting on the, what, Great North East, or another rail line. But they are linked up. They were linked up in them days. But normally, if I'd have been travelling as a civilian, I'd have had to go to London and change trains to get the train to Liverpool. But they didn't with us. They took this troop train all the way from Dover to, because it wasn't only the few North Ants going, there was some Warwicks just up from road from us. They were on the same boat as we were going on. There were several of them they picked up. But they took us to Liverpool right onto the dock.
What was the atmosphere like on this train journey? I mean, were you locked in, or was there any precautions against you deserting or anything like that?
Not that I know of. No, nothing like that, no.
Were people worried about going overseas?
Some of them were. There were some of the older ones were. When they went back in the barracks, I'm going to tell you about it later on. There was a boy called Jack Warner who volunteered to take a place of a man that was married and didn't want to go. And he got on the draft instead of that. He did change over on the draft. They allowed it to happen.
But people weren't nervous on the train.
No. Because when you're young and simple-minded, you don't I say that with... But when you're young, you don't realise, you don't see danger and things. Like, that's why young lads tear about on motorbikes and in cars today. They don't see the dangers. When you start thinking, it can be a bit naughty for the army if you start thinking too much, this sort of thing.
So you weren't thinking much?
No. I thought this was an adventure. Where were we going? We didn't know we were going to Italy. So at all events, they loaded us on.
Now, what was the ship you went on?
On the Cape Town Castle. And it was dreadful, really.
Can you describe the mess deck and the conditions of
it? Yeah, it was mess decks we were on. We were crammed in there, and there was a load of Irish boys. Where they'd come from, I don't know, from Ireland, I suppose. They're Inniskilling Fusiliers, Royal Irish, because they were going to the same division as I was, but we didn't know. But we had a hammock, and there's two hooks, like, on beams, and you got a long table down below, like tables in line, and the hammock in the night was strung across there, all in a line, like sardines packing above. And then in the morning you had to get down, take your hammock down, roll it up, and then you sat at benches each side of this table to eat. But you go up on deck, of course, in the daytime, and because we were 10 days getting to Italy, they took us out. We landed there in the morning, time they'd loaded the ship and that. We sailed about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Now, what was the atmosphere like on the mess decks?
Well, it was crammed. There was hostility there. Chaps would argue and that, because of space. There was a little space. There was about a brigade aboard there, about 4,000 or 5,000 men on the ship. And, I mean, it was crammed, terrible. And you had a card, and you had a mess card, and you went down. There was a time printed on it, you allocated. And when you went down to the dining rooms, you couldn't all cram down there, of course. They had to have them in different, sit-ins. And so they punched a hole through, like, it'd say dinner, the 1st of, or 10th of January, and they'd punch a hole in that, and then you'd go down and get your meal. And but it was crammed. It was awful, really. And chaps smoking down there. and we had to do hold guards.
Did it smell?
Oh, yes, it did. It smelled of human, like, sweat and smoke, and it was dreadful. I didn't like it at all.
When you started, were you seasick? Or were people seasick?
No. Yeah, there was seasick. I did feel a bit queasy. I did, I must confess.
But you weren't sick?
No, I wasn't sick, no.
You said about the hold guards.
Yeah, well, that's where all your kits bags and that are down, and they put men down there to guard the kit, like allocated it, and but also you had to do what they call the airtight door. There's doors in the passageways on the ship. There was doors, and if the alarm went, didn't matter which side of the door you were, you slammed that door and screwed with a big sort of handle. You shut the big round handle. You locked the door. Now, what had happened then, if a part of the ship had been torpedoed, this stopped the water going through. So, but if you were the wrong side of the door, you still had to lock that door. So too bad. And so we were on the airtight doors, or hold doors, watertight doors, and the hold...
What was it like in the hold guard?
Oh, dreadful down there, that was, because you didn't smoke or anything like that down there. And but you had to watch it, because some of our emergency supplies that we were taking with us to the battalion were down there with us as well. See, there were officers of our regiment as well going with us, and all their kit and our kit bags were down there, all our rifles and things. Each hold was allocated to different regiments.
And what about the actual trip?
Not really. I remember going, when we were going through the straits, they went up, as I say, north, round the top of Ireland, out into the Atlantic, and others, they joined us. One fun one day, they had a bloom barrage flying from the ship, a little bloom barrage, and one broke loose, and they had artillery chaps, what they call AA, they were ACAC of chappies with an anchor, their badge was, but they were artillery, and they were on these ships. And one broke loose, and they had these Horlicon machine guns, and they opened up to shoot it down quickly, like, you know. They shot it down very easy, but to hear this Horlicon machine gun go was quite something. But we played housey-housey on deck. They had church service on deck. We had PT on deck. They took up so many soldiers, like, they couldn't all cram up there. But you weren't allowed to smoke on deck. Weren't allowed to throw a dog end into the Atlantic. They said, any rubbish flown overboard, and you were in trouble, because they reckon the submarines, the U-boats, could follow rubbish. They'd follow it, knowing it was a troop ship. But we saw, when we were going into the Straits of Gibraltar, we saw schools of dolphin and things playing, porpoises playing beside the boat. And one time there was a whole school come up on the side, and everyone dived over to the side where they were, and it had made an effect, because they bawled from the top on a megaphone, get away from the side, because it was, you know, get thousands of chaps or hundreds of chaps leaning. The blessed boat must have been leaning. They were swear, but we had the destroyers out each side, the convoy, and they would every so often they'd take off and come in among the ships. And they made no signal to one another, or no sound signal. They'd run their flags up, and they were zigzagging. The ship would change course as soon as the flags went up. Whoever was in charge of the convoy, they were zigzagging. But we never thought about U-boats, and yet we were out in the Atlantic and going through the Med, and we landed at Naples.